Production. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talk Team Twilight Zone.
Is that the junction over there?
Big Horn and the Little Big Horn. That's where they converge.
That put them in a Conju Ford about 4 miles up. And that's where he's thinking about crossing.
Them Sioux. Wonder where they are now.
I wouldn't be too impatient, Mr. Two Stripes.
We can go on back and tell your General Custer his Indian trail is just as fresh as ever. A little too fresh for my pay.
I'm an Indian outlaw, half Cherokee and Choctaw. My baby, she's a Chippewa, she's a one of a kind. All my friends call me Bear Claw. The village chicken is my pawpaw. He gets his orders from my mama. She makes him walk the line. You can find me in my wigwam. I'll be beating on my tom-tom. Pull out the pipe and smoke you some. And pass it around. Cause I'm an Indian outlaw. Half Cherokee and Choctaw. My baby, she's a Chippewa. She's a one of a kind.
Don't you think we better get back and find that CP?
Shoot, what's the matter, McCluskey? Don't you want to hang around and wait for the Union cavalry, huh? So this is where they fought, huh, Sarge? Right around here.
Yeah, it was around here someplace. You know, when I was a kid, I read about everything that was ever written on it. Custer and the 7th were an advance guard for a general named Terry. The last thing anybody ever heard from Custer was that he was dividing his regiment into three parties. He was planning on surrounding what he thought was a small bunch of Indians. And, Captain Benteen took three troops and he went south. And Major Reno, he crossed the river and he followed an Indian trail. And Custer went right up the middle. And he rode right into him and he was slaughtered.
Connors, this is the captain.
This is McCluskey, sir.
McCluskey, do you think you guys might extend yourselves a bit and give me your position?
About 4 miles down Rosebud Creek. We're about to cross over.
You're about to come back here in the double. You're about to report to me personally.
You're about to, within the next half hour, you'll be spending the next three national holidays in the guardhouse.
Yes, sir, just a minute. Here's Sergeant Connors.
Captain, this is Connors.
Connors, do I have to send a couple of MPs down there?
Captain, look, we're just a mile away from where Major Reno met the Sioux.
Listen to me, Connors. I'm going to give this to you just once. When these maneuvers are over, you can come back here on a vacation and dig arrowheads or anything you like. But right now, I want a government-issue tank back here at the command post with three National Guardsmen named Connors, McCluskey, and Langsford right alongside it. Now, you've got exactly 30 minutes to bring her back here. Acknowledge. Connors, acknowledge. Connors!
He's broken off.
Well, me and my friends love Larry and Bo. We love Curly's brother Shemp and his fat clone Joe. It's such a delight to boogie and hustle, dancing all night doing the Curly shuffle. Hey, Mo, hey, Mo.
Hey, Mo, hey, Mo.
Well,
all right, fellas.
Let's do it!
Too bad they couldn't have brought the tank up. It would have helped.
Beg pardon, sir?
Nothing, Lieutenant. I didn't say anything.
open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and in-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. This is Talking Twilight Zone, and I'm your host, Lynn, and I'm here with two of my co-hosts, Robert and Dave. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Unfortunately, Bobby, my husband Bobby, will not be able to be with us today. He's in the hospital. Yeah, nothing serious, but he took a little fall, and he ended up in the hospital, and he's with us in spirit. You know, he wanted me to do the show no matter what, so I'm here, and I hope everyone will send out their good wishes to him and keep a positive thought for him, because hopefully he'll be home soon. And I also want to welcome Rick Wall, our loyal listener, Rick Wall, and guest number five. Hello, Rick. So I'm happy to be here today. I wish Bobby could be here, but, you know, we're still have a good show, and it is a beautiful day here today, so that's always nice, a nice sunny day. I hope everyone's having a good day. And today we're going to be talking about The Seventh is Made Up of Phantoms. And I'm going to turn it over to Robert for the opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
June 25th, 1964. Or if you prefer, June 25th, 1876. The cast of characters, in order of their appearance, a patrol of General Custer's cavalry and a patrol of National Guardsmen in a maneuver. Past and present are about to collide. As they are wont to do in a very special bivouac area known as the Twilight Zone.
Yes, this is The Seventh is Made Up of Phantoms and stars Warren Oates and Greg Morris. And it concerns three United States Army National Guard soldiers. And they're on it.
Oh, Lynn, is this like a Three Stooges episode here?
Your curly shuffle was good. I like that.
I was wondering what that was all about.
I know. I haven't heard the song in a long time. I like to hear that. That was good.
The Three Stooges in this story. go on, Lynn. Sorry.
Very cool. And they're an M3 Stork tank crew. And they're participating in a war game that's being conducted near the Battle of Little Bighorn. And that's, of course, the site of Lieutenant Colonel George Custer's last stand. And their orders coincide with the route of Custer and his men. So as they follow the route, they hear strange things such as Indian battle cries and horses running, but nobody's there. So the men start examining what the possibilities could be. And they try to theorize, you know, use all these theories of what could be happening. And one of the men, Master Sergeant William Connors, he wonders if they've somehow gone back in time. Well, when they return to the site, Connors reports to his captain, or I'm sorry, when they return to, you know, their camp, he reports to the captain what occurred. And the captain yells at him, reprimands him. He says, you know, you're crazy. You know, what are you talking about? There's nothing like that could be happening. So the following day, the trio goes out again. Three guys go out, and they begin to experience this strange phenomenon. And the captain, he contacts them by radio, and he orders them to return to the base. And then Connors tries to explain what's happening. Then he breaks contact, and the captain sends the MPs to bring him in. However, the three men abandon their tank and continue on foot with their sidearms and rifles, and then they find a group of teepees. So McCluskey, who is a private, he goes to investigate, and he returns, except he's got an arrow sticking out of his back. So the men climb a ridge, and that's where they see a battle taking place below. They decide they're going to go join it, and they're never seen again. Later, the captain. And later, the captain enters the Custer Battlefield National Monument. An MP reports that they found an abandoned tank. And then the two of them notice that the names of the missing soldiers are on the monument with the names of Custer's men. And the captain states that it was a pity that the missing soldiers couldn't have taken the tank with them to the battle. Yeah, I guess that would have made a big difference, huh? That would have made a real big difference. A tank and Custer's the battle. Yeah, cool.
Well, you know, Lynn, I like Custer pie.
Coconut Custer pie. Mm-hmm. Coconut Custer pie, but yes. Coconut George Custer pie, right.
I think Robert's got sunstroke.
I think it's Robert's for drinking. No, I found this episode to be pointless.
It's the episode, Dave, that wants to make you drink.
Yes, it is. I thought it was pointless and boring. I mean, three National Guardsmen, they see all kinds of unusual things, such as TPs and smoke signals. They see a canteen. They hear strange things, such as Indian war cries. And then they finally come to the conclusion that they're in time warp and have stumbled in this time warp upon the historical battle.
Ripping time.
Known as Custer's Last Stand. So for some insane reason, and I'll never understand what it is, but in true Three Stooges style, these three numbskulls decide to jump right into the battle.
They're doing exactly what they are trained to do as soldiers.
But to go into a battle that they
with
have nothing
2,000 Sioux Indians, what chance do you have against that?
You are trained to go into battle as a soldier.
Well, I agree with you, Rick.
That is your only reason for existence.
Well, they were smart enough and not take the tank with them. Then that would really cause some changes there.
I agree with you, Rick, but you go into a battle that doesn't concern you.
And they're
you.
White. And they were white.
Yeah.
Okay. Kill the red man. Just like any other white man would.
But it wasn't their battle.
Doesn't matter.
I mean, it was a battle that took place a century ago.
Doesn't matter. Fellow soldiers are fighting and dying. It's our duty to aid them. Yeah. End of discussion.
End of discussion. Well, it's become no surprise that they were killed, right? I mean, they got killed. And, as far as I was concerned, there was no rhyme or reason for their actions. I thought they were nitwits, but, Rick seems to think differently. And, I might be a bit kinder this episode if I thought that really they should have gone into the battle, but I don't think there was a method to their madness. I mean, Rick, you think they should have, but I don't know.
They are soldiers. That is their job. That is their duty.
Rick's not backing down on this one. Well, I thought it was pointless.
Evidently, nobody's been in the military.
Nope.
No.
You are not a human being. You are a number.
Mm-hmm.
Or a rank.
Yeah.
Okay?
Well,
that is what you are. You have enemies. Your job is to kill the enemy before they kill you. That is
your only reason for
existence.
You don't stand up. I'm sorry. But I'll wait till my turn.
Okay. Well, I still think it was a pointless episode. I didn't like the conclusion of it. And that's really all.
Well,
you
could say
about
the Roman thing tying into Rickwall with the 300 situation and Roman times going against big odds.
True. No, I gave it a zero because I really did not like this episode at all. Mm. And actually, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to give Bobby's review because I'm just going to read it from his written review on the board. And, of course, he found it boring as well. I mean, he figured Rod Serling was at the bottom of the barrel and his writing fatigue was painfully obvious, he said. But He thought it was 22 minutes of endless prattle between National Guardsmen, wondering if they really are seeing and hearing things or whether they're imagining them. And he said he was wondering if he was wondering if he was really seeing his beloved sci-fi series come down to this. But he felt that because of the zone's minuscule budget, and they did have a very low budget, and they really screwed Rod Serling a lot on his budget, they really couldn't even show any part of the battle. He thought it would have made it better if they could have shown them actually running into the battle and fighting the Indians, just to see something of the battle. But they didn't do that because obviously they couldn't afford to show any of battle scenes. But he thought the teepees were pretty bad. He said they looked like they were abandoned from a long time ago feature-length Western film company, and they probably were. But
probably from a John Wayne film or something.
Probably,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, probably. But he just didn't think there was much of a payoff at the end of this one. And he says that, you know, you keep hoping something will happen, but it never does. So he hated it, and he said it was full of phantoms from glory days gone by, and he gave it a zero. But, you know, we both thought it was kind of boring. A lot of talk and not enough. Little too much talk and not enough action, I guess you could say. But now I will turn it over to you, Robert.
Well, thank you, Lynn, but I'm going to defer to Rick because I'm really interested. You kind of took my interest, Rick. So.
Why? Everything I've said has been laughed at.
Oh,
no, go ahead. I want to hear it.
Ned, laugh at
no,
you.
I'm not
I
going
just
to say anything because everything
at
I've said has been laughed at.
I am not laughing at you. I just, you know, I said I can see what you're saying. I see your point. To me, what I thought was, now you're right, I've never been in the military. And I was thinking, well, this battle was from a century ago, had nothing to do with them. Why go in and get killed for a battle that was from the past? I mean, it was a time warp, so they were in the past. So why do that?
Maybe they thought they could change it.
Maybe they
well,
did,
that,
yeah.
That's the point I was going to make. But do you not want to speak at all at this point, Rick Wald?
If you guys don't laugh at what I'm going to say, I will.
We take you seriously, Rick. We really
nobody
do.
Nobody has done. I said I just disagree.
Yeah, I just disagree.
Lynn and Robert were laughing at everything I said.
I apologize.
I do too. I'm not in the military, so I wouldn't know anything.
I think they were amused at the vehemency with which she was stating your point.
Yeah, that was it. I mean, I didn't disagree with what you were saying. I didn't see the point of them going into the battle. But Rick, I wasn't laughing at you because I love your commentary, and I find everything that you say to be of interest. I really do.
And you
don't
understand, Rick, everybody's going to have a different view on things. And that's what makes society the way it is. We're not all going to agree on the same thing. That's what we're here, to hear different opinions.
Yeah, but I've never laughed at anything that was said, even though I disagree with you.
Well, I apologize. I didn't mean to laugh. I didn't mean it to be an insulting laugh. I really didn't.
No, same here. That's why I want you to go next, because I do want to hear your opinion, because it does pique my interest.
And
okay.
I agree. I agree.
They are three white men fighting Indians or red men or redskins.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Manifest destiny. You heard about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If we go in. And maybe there should have been a scene with Benteen. Who was it? Benteen, who was the whole gung-ho one?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Benteen.
The Warnos character, I think.
Yeah.
Richard Longsford or something.
Yeah, but no, I was talking about the character, actor.
That was the character's name.
Richard
Longsford.
Okay, he was the gung-ho one?
Uh-huh.
Okay, maybe there should have been a scene with him saying, you know, well, we go in and help them. or a line saying that. But like I said, you know, they're soldiers. That's their job, to fight. What is cavalry? No matter how many years ago it was, they are still soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
We're sitting here watching our quote-unquote brothers getting killed by enemy forces. What are we going to do? Are we going to sit there and watch this, or are we going to participate? If I were there, I'd do it too.
Well, that's the point. They shouldn't have been there. They were only there because they disobeyed orders, which a soldier
shouldn't do. I mean, it's very much like the final countdown where Kurt Douglas and Martin Sheen, when it comes to the point where they're going to take effect, then, you know, the thing happens and it doesn't happen. So that kind of, you know, that situation like that. They didn't have that choice in this episode.
Right.
Open, they walked through it. So.
And if you remember, the Admiral told them not to launch the F-16s or 15s or whatever it was in the last countdown. Even though they wanted to and blow them the Zeros and whatnot out of the sky.
Yeah,
but he said no. Yeah.
No, I see what you're saying as far as they may have thought that they could change things. You know, because all these time travel, like even like that the one back there where the professor from Gilligan's Island, went back to try to stop Lincoln from being assassinated.
Russell Johnson.
Russell Johnson back there. Yes. They always think that if they go back, they're going to change history.
There is a line of dialogue, Lynn, where he says, and perhaps we can change it. The actual sergeant says that.
Oh,
one line, isn't it?
You're right. Yeah. So they did. They thought they were going to change things. But I was thinking, well, they knew how this ended. They knew that Custer's last stand was it. I mean, they knew that this battle, you know, was the end. Everyone was going to get killed. And they're just three men. They're three men, and they're going to go in there. And do they really think that the outcome is going to be different, that they're going to change history? That was what I felt was the pointless part. Like, maybe they should have just gone back to base and said, and not said anything because the captain didn't believe them anyway, but maybe just going back and said, well, we can't change this. You know,
and also taking a wounded person, should they gone and do that, or should they took that wounded person back and got him medical help?
That even would have been, would have been. And like Bobby's point was, you know, if they could have just shown some of the battle, shown them actually trying to go in there and make a difference, but it was like you just see them going off and you're like, oh well, they're dead, they're going to die.
I thought they did show some like footage of cavalry charging and stuff.
They just showed the
sound effects. No, sound effects.
The sound effects. That was all it was. At the very end, you see the three of them rushing in. They did just rush to go fight the battle. And I laughed at them because I said, you idiots. You know, like you're never going to survive this. Why don't you just go back to camp and give it up? But
take your wounded soldier back and get him treated instead of going into a hopeless battle. I understand what you're saying, Rick, that you would go in there and defend your fellow men. But to some of us, they look like knuckleheads going in like that.
Yeah, but I see your point, Rick. I honestly do. You know, like I said, I wasn't laughing at you. I see your point. To me, I thought they were nitwits for doing it. But, you know, I know what you're saying, that they felt that was their duty to go in and help the guys. But since they were in a time warp, those guys were already dead, really. I mean, they in the day and age they were in, those guys were dead. So how are they going to bring them back to, I don't know. I just seems strange to me, that's all.
Anyway, I give it a 1.
Oh, okay. So you weren't that crazy about it either as far as...
No, but I'm just defending...
Their reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, I guess I can see, you know, you're right, that they are their soldiers and they thought they were doing their duty. I just thought, you know, that it was a pointless thing to go into a battle that you already know the outcome. I couldn't imagine why they would think three men are going to change it against all those Indians. That was a big battle, wasn't it? I mean, there were a lot of
2,000 Sioux Indians.
Yeah, and you're going to have three men that are going to try to change history, which I just thought they were numbskulls.
With 2,500 other U.S. cavalry members.
Right. I mean, they had a lot of backup, but you know, I don't know if I don't know if they were really thinking straight. I don't know.
Well,
but
the problem with Custard was he divided his forces, and I played that clip in the opening where
he only had 200. He only had 200 at this point.
Mm-hmm. Because he
oh,
had
that
one split off to the left, one split off to the right.
In
his
company, he just had a couple of companies of 100 each, I think.
Oh, man. No wonder it didn't turn out well. Jeez. Well, you know, it's just, overall, I really did find the story boring, though. It was a lot of chit-chat, you know. And I thought actually the best part of the whole story was when the guy comes walking back up the hill and he turns around and he's talking to them and he turns around and the arrow is sticking out of his back. And it was like, whoa. In a way, you almost expected it, but then in a way, you didn't, you know.
Well, the whole thing is you're not going in 100% in the first place. You're going in, about 75% because you got a wounded man. And the whole thing about the man, you should have took him back.
Maybe they couldn't get back. Who knows? Maybe they we don't know if they tried or not.
They were able to a couple of times, but you might have been right. The rip and tie might have sealed itself. Because remember, Rick, they give you hints when you heard the wind. Because also this is kind of an interesting situation because they go 6 minutes into this episode before Rod comes out and gives his, swell
crit. Opening narration, yeah.
Yeah, his opening narration. So usually these episodes don't go 6 minutes in before he comes on. So
maybe every 6 minutes there was some
closing
gap
up
or something?
Yeah, it was closing up. Remember that one with the little girl lost? And
yeah,
they went
into
the wall, and he said he got him out just in time because as the wall was closing up, you know, the whole time he was in there, the wall kept closing up. So, yeah, I guess it does. It just, like, closes up as time goes on.
And it could have been the same situation with the last flight. He had to take his plane back before he couldn't do it.
Yeah, before he couldn't get back,
Yeah, the last flight. Yeah, the last flight,
exactly.
602 or something. Last flight is 602 or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if Russell Johnson didn't get back from, 18, whatever, was it 63 or whatever, if he didn't get back from there, he might have been stuck in that time warp. So I guess that, you know, you can get stuck in the time warp. It's an interesting... theory, you know, to think about, you know, can you ever go back?
Yeah.
But
I wanted you to talk before me, Rick, because I was very interested in what you had to say, or I wouldn't
have
to talk before me. So.
All right.
Never think we have anything again. I'm making fun of you. Is this the episode? And anybody that's been in the military is going to understand differently about certain things
as
well.
Right.
So,
I love you, Rick. You know that by now. I love you.
Well, look, I'm
if you don't come to the shows, I'm very upset.
I'm the kind of person who was always made fun of. Even nowadays, even though I'm 55, I still get made fun of by other people who think they're
better.
I got
made fun of,
not.
And I'm 51, so,
I'm the same age
I got
as you,
made
Nate. Or not, Rick, I'm the same age as you.
Right.
I got made.
Yeah, we take everybody seriously. Even Dave, we take you seriously.
And
Dave,
I'm ancient. I'm older than
Dave seriously.
I'm older than Bobby, so.
Yes, you are. Yeah, and Bobby's always thinking that he's. Oh, you should hear him in the hospital. Oh, I'm old. I'm just about ready to cash it in. I mean, you should hear this. I mean, somebody, cut me a break, will you? My God. No, Dave,
well, we love you, Dave. We do.
And we love Rick, too.
Mm-hmm.
If Rick stopped coming to shows, I would be very upset.
Yeah, we're always happy when you come in here. I mean,
yeah,
we're
right.
happy when everybody comes in here, even Lou, where
Lou's
Lou.
Yeah,
and
he
Ken.
Might be on vacation.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and Ken.
But let me go ahead and finish what I was going to say here.
Now you all laugh.
I don't have that much. Oh, yeah, shoot. Yeah, sometimes you have to watch out for those Indians. They always want to come and attack you. See? Okay. Anyway, one thing that this reminded me of, and you guys would know this, is Torchwood. Remember the episode in Torchwood when Owen fell in love with a girl from 42? I think it was. Wasn't around 42? Mm-hmm. Where it goes, the plane comes from the rift. And
Is that the one with the hospital and all? Yeah, I think. Yeah. She's a nurse or something?
Yeah, the guy couldn't take it anymore in our century, so he kind of took his life and Captain Jack joined him. Because remember, Captain Jack can't die, so.
Right.
Spoilers. Anyway.
What is Torchwood? Is that a series?
Oh, it's great. You got to see it sometime. You and Bobby should watch it. It's
There's four series of it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? I wonder if Netflix does.
There is season one, season two, and then Children of Earth. And what's the other one name?
Children of Earth's the best one to watch in terms of the quality. The last one's the other one with Miracle Day in that.
Miracle Day, that's it, yeah.
Is it called Miracle Day, the whole thing? I can't remember now.
And Peter Capaldi is in Children of Earth. He plays an administrator in the government, which...
That's definitely the most frightening one, but the best.
But yeah, I enjoy series one and two, and it's amazing how we get the origin stories towards the end, which is kind of nice because they go right into Rusty Davies, who did this series during the time that when Doctor Who was going on. I think he was doing it during David Tennant's era, wasn't he? Guys,
yes.
During
no, he was with the Ninth Doctor. That he met Rose and the Ninth Doctor before that.
Oh, okay.
Captain
so
Jack.
He met them in
the Second World War.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a complex, but it's a very interesting series, and I enjoy Captain Jack and Yanto and all the characters in it. Well, anyway, it was this episode. I think it was season one when this came out. But anyway, there was a character who was a doctor named Owen, and he falls in love with this pilot who's from the 40s. Basically, Torchwood is centered around this rip in time, and then things come out of it from various times and stuff like that. And it just very much reminded me of that one. But it just another thing that kind of was interesting, too, is these guys go in there with their uniforms, which you can tell material-wise and stuff is different from what they were wearing back in the 1800s, because this is supposedly an 80-year time difference between the 7th Cavalry and where they're having their war games at, that I'm surprised nothing was said along, you know, the back way about these three guys that had funny uniforms.
Yeah, right.
That's
right. It was 1964. Yeah.
In the fighting. And the commander...
Compared to 1864, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So nothing was said about that.
1876 was the battle.
Big difference in the uniforms, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then he says about they should have taken the tank. You know, for someone who's bright and knows things, you should know that you should not take you know, things from the future back into the past because you alter the things in the future. So, you know, what if Germany developed rockets earlier than when they did? Or what if someone took a transistor radio back into the 1700s? I mean, you don't know what kind of advantage somebody would have.
Well,
and that's why all these time stories and stuff about.
Well, it's the famous Star Trek one, isn't it? Where Kirk has to let the girl die, get run over by a van, when they've gone through the, you know, the portal, the time portal.
Yeah, Joan Collins one.
Yeah, the Joan Collins one where they've gone back after Bones, and Bones watches them, and he said, "Jim, you could have saved her." And Spock says he knows.
Sitting on the edge of forever.
Yeah.
There wouldn't have been a spaceship for them to go back to.
Or the one where the Enterprise gets stuck back in time and it's damaged, and it involved the astronaut, where he finds out he has a son. Remember that one?
So oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Back into time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was
or
a good
Jerry
episode.
No, he wasn't an astronaut. He was a captain of
a
airplane. He was a pilot,
yeah. Yeah, great episode.
Yeah. But his son becomes, an astronaut.
Well, you also think of that movie Somewhere in Time, which I think we all like that episode with or that movie with Christopher Reeve, Jane Seymour. You know, he's back in time. He finally is with her. And then he pulls out the penny from his pocket that says 1973, and he's pulled right back into the future, and he loses her.
Yeah.
I love that movie,
So there's all these ones that we seem to look back on with time and the way, you know, if you change things. Or even, you know, in the past, the one with Dana Andrews, too.
Yeah, No Time Like the Past,
But, you know, I give it a 1.5 out of 5. I mean, if anything, just the whole time, going back in time factor.
Yeah.
But go ahead, Dave. I didn't mean to hold you up because I know we probably took stuff you wanted to talk about, so I do apologize for...
No, absolutely not. If you've done, I'll go, certainly.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, of course, we're in Season 5, so it's Series 5, Episode 130. First aired 6th of December, 1963. The actual war that they're encountering was in 1876, but they say that their story is set in June, the same day, June the 25th, but in 1964. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The whole episode was underfunding. They didn't really have the money to do the story justice. But I do like these sort of time travel films, although it wasn't particularly realised. They copped out at the end. No, we didn't even, as we say, the real phantoms in this story weren't the soldiers. It was the missing actors. You know, where was the cavalry? Where were the Indians? We saw one empty horse as... David Niven would say, "Bring on the empty horses," because they couldn't afford actors to sit on them.
One word: budget, Dave. Budget.
Yeah, exactly, budget.
Yeah.
Let me go to why I think differently to Rick Wall on this. Two things. First of all, if they were typical soldiers, they wouldn't have disobeyed those orders at least twice directly. So they wouldn't have put themselves in the position, and they didn't actually see the battle. They only heard it, and they ran over the ridge to engage. Secondly, and there was that line where one of them said, "And we may even change it." Now, this one guy, the sergeant that was the sergeant on the tank, he studied this, and the young lad seemed to know quite a bit about it as well. If they knew that much about it, then they should have been aware of any repercussions if they changed it. So I think they should have played more. Although there was a lot of talking, Lynn, and I agree with you on that, some of that talking should have been about the dilemma of, you know, one of them wanting to go in there and, you know, sort them out, you know, call them this and say they were, you know, it was, you know, one side was vastly overmanned or whatever it was, and we want to go in there and sort it out.
Overmanned.
That should have been, yeah, that's right. Bad limit.
Yeah.
They should have done that. The other thing is, I mean, I lost a little bit of credulity when the boy was wounded, and they think the obvious thing to do would be make a makeshift stretcher and put him on the outside of the tank and take him back to the, you know, to the to the company. They didn't. Now,
yeah, I wondered about that myself. I mean, he could have bled to death. He could have died. I mean,
right.
You know.
Now, to if they did decide that they would have, you know, their desire to join the battle and sort things out was overriding. I mean, what difference could they have made, as you said? But I think they could have made a lot of difference. But what they could have done, and what perhaps they should have done, a third alternative would have been, they both had, two of them had repeating rifles, and the young boy had a revolver. So the revolver's, not a revolver, an automatic, which probably had 12, 15 rounds in it. They had their submachine guns or something, and they probably had clips on the belts and that. So they probably had at least 100 rounds each. So what they could have easily done is overlooked the ridge where the battle was going on. And don't forget, those rifles that they had would be accurate to 1,000 yards.
They could have been sharpshooters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They could have been. They could have gone for this bloke probably could have identified who was the leader of the Indians. He'd be able to pick the chiefs out quite easily from the headgear and that. And they could have sort of helped without Custer knowing he was being helped, if you know what I mean. But I'm not saying that's what I wanted to have happened, but that would have been one of the options. But I think really, the only way you could have got out of the dilemma with something that just as they charged in, you know, the wind rushed in again, and, you know, suddenly the fighting disappeared in front of them. In other words, so they'd made their decision. They'd had the dilemma. They'd made their decision. But before they could have gone in and influenced it, it had vanished. Now, I thought they were rather clever in a couple of things because it didn't cost anything. For instance, that wind. When they first came up to the tented area where they found the water bottle, we had the wind rush there. And then it went again. So as though, to my mind, they were going into one time zone, coming out of the time zone. For instance, there was a second situation where they were on the side of the ridge and one of the corporals was leaving them because he thought they were hooey. They thought there was, I'm going to go and get a padded selfie, like I'm off. And there was nothing down below. When the radio burst into life on the tank from their headquarters, there was nothing there. After the radio call and that man went off, suddenly the tented village or the teepees appeared. So they did, in a way, if you actually watch it carefully, they didn't have an ambiguity. In other words, when they were on the radio, they were in today's time. When they weren't on the radio and the wind blew, they were in the other time. So they did seem to move in and out of the times. And
so, Dave, do you think that's what happened when they cut off radio, where they were talking to him, and then the soldier made the comment they got cut off?
Yeah, the wind blew, yeah. and they were back again. I'm surprised at Robert that he didn't mention the war games, Doctor Who. I don't think he mentioned the war games.
Yeah. And I'll mention something else. Remember Angel? Did you remember the last episode of Angel?
Oh, yeah.
You take the 3,000 on the right. I'll take
that. Yeah. but for Lynn and for the listeners later, with a very early story in the second Doctor of the Doctor Who, they landed in this area where there seemed to be an ongoing battle. But when they moved to get away from it, they went through like a misty area, Lynn. But when they came through the mist, they'd been watching a World War One battle fight go on. They went through this and then they encountered Roman soldiers. Then he ran away from then, went through some mist, and then there were Roman soldiers on chariots. And it turns out that this alien race had brought soldiers from different time zones together and put them into these separated areas by this sort of mist. But this mist had like a forgetfulness in it for the people that were had been processed. So they each stayed in their own thing, and they were examining them for, you know, battle plans and things like that. So,
and if they wavered, each of the head leader had glasses that he used to
hypnotize them. Yeah. So, I mean, it was disappointing that they couldn't do it properly, but I think if there should have been more played of the dilemma, they could, quite rightly, as Rick said, have made the decision that we're soldiers, we go in and fight, you know, and that is a legitimate thing. But then something happened, maybe the wind blew again, and suddenly the soldiers just evaporated in front of them. In other words, so they were prevented from changing history. I thought that. But I do like these sort of stories, Lynn. So, because of that, and I'd also thought about the final countdown from 1980. Mm-hmm. A few things about the actors. Warren Oates, of course, the man with the teeth. He was the one that played the middle ranking of the three on the tank, the one that went off. Liked him. The young boy.
He was most famous for Bonnie and Clyde. He played, I think, wasn't Clyde's brother or something like that.
Well, he was. No. The young lad. He was in 90 episodes, three 90-minute Western shows like Wagon Train, The Virginian, other ones. But he's related to Daniel Boone, the actor Richard Boone, and also the singer Pat Boone. He actually was a singer. Yeah, I'll put the wiki link in there. And the black actor, the one that was sent out after them,
Greg Morris.
Of course, yeah, I thought it was great because he was sent on an impossible mission to bring those guys back. And, of course,
right.
He was starred in
Mission Impossible.
Yeah, and I think he's a great actor, that Greg Morris. So they have some good actors. The Warren Oates, by the way, only the year before this, had been in a big film with Randolph Scott and Joel McCrea called Ride the High Country. If you haven't ever seen that film, it's a fantastic cowboy film. So do check that out.
Who I met with in Bonnie and Clyde was Warren Oates. He played, Clyde's brother.
Yeah, right. So I'm going to say, as a Twilight Zone episode, I can only give it a 2. But because it's a time travel, I would have loved to have given it 3. But I think, you know, the cost cutting was just too severe. They couldn't even have one token Indian there. But I did like the way the rest of the group found out about, you know, that scratch your head moment. And of course, that's the another one, Doctor Who, Vincent and the Doctor, Robert, where they bring Vincent Van Gogh and the art historian is explaining what Vincent's place in history of art was.
The museum's guy.
For Lynn, the Doctor who has his time machine and brought Vincent Van Gogh, because he was obviously a very depressed artist, brought him here so he could overhear this eloquent speech about how highly rated he was to try and boost him up and hopefully that he wouldn't then commit suicide. Now, we don't know the way Doctor Who does the story. We don't know in actual fact whether if that hadn't happened, quote unquote, in real life, Vincent might have committed suicide 6 months earlier. And because of the Doctor's intervention, in some timeline, in some world history, he'd painted at least, you know, another dozen paintings because that speech that he heard gave him, you know, brushed away his blues for a while. But of course, after the Doctor had gone, he would have settled back into his morose state and so on. So, I think I've covered most of the things I wanted to say.
Two of them was one of the Doctor and the other one was the TARDIS exploding.
Right. But so I can only give it 2's being generous, I realise that, but I think the story could have been a 3, and in my mind, because it was time travel, I want to give it a 3. Back to you, Lynn.
Okay, yeah, and I agree, and that's what Bobby said. If only they could have shown something of the battle, it would have probably made it a little better. But you know, I like the time travel story aspect. It's just a shame that they couldn't show. But the budget, I mean, Rod got screwed left and right on his budget. I mean, I'm sure he wanted to do a lot more. And I sometimes wonder how much better his episodes would have been if they had just given him the money he needed. But they, I don't think they believed in him enough, or they didn't believe in the series enough. I don't know what the case was, but he was always screwed in his budget. And hi, Felix. Glad you're here. I'm sorry I didn't acknowledge you earlier. Nice to see you. And he said he likes more notes than anything.
Yeah, good man.
But, so basically I think we're going like from a zero to a two on this. And not the greatest episode, but, you know, it had its good parts and it had its flaws. But
now, Dave, did you say you hang with a three, or were you thinking maybe?
No, I'd like to give it a three, but don't forget Felix and Guest 5 can put a rating in the room if they want.
Yep. Yeah, go ahead. Felix and Guest 5, what you think
Felix
of the episode.
Felix is a two. Felix is
out of five. Okay.
Yeah, Felix is a two out of five, and Guest 5
Thank
has
you, Felix.
Been a rating. But, yeah, so... That takes care of this episode, and then 2 weeks from now.
You know, Lynn, we've had some controversy going on where Doctor Who and some leaked scripts got out, unfortunately. Guest 5, give it a three. Thank you, Guest 5.
Oh, Guest 5, give it a three. Thank you, Guest 5.
You can mention it, Dave, to Ian, wondering what is going on with Florida, since that seemed to be where the unsecured line was for the scripts. I said the Latin America there in Miami, Florida, I guess didn't have a secure line and some stuff get out there.
Oh, they leaked out? Really?
Yeah, including a starter or a
an actual episode.
Yeah, a screener. That's it. It's a black and white screener that was leaked out, and luckily they caught it in time, because my understanding was they had not only the five scripts, but they had five screeners too, because they had a screener for each script.
Huh.
But it only got out. So
one of them
luckily,
out.
Yeah, just the one, which is the first episode, unfortunately.
Huh.
But that's been the talk about on the podcasts that I've been listening to this week. So, just a word of warning. I hope you don't spoil it for other people, and just keep it to yourselves. Because
shame people have to do that.
Well, I do have the five scripts, and I did see the screener, but I'm not going to say nothing. So, but
no, please don't.
Okay.
I haven't seen them.
Nope.
No.
Nope. But it's easy to get, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a shame.
I only have four of them.
Oh, you didn't get that last one?
No.
Huh. You have to see if you can hunt for it, because there's one that had all five, and I got all five of them. So
don't give it out on the recording.
Oh, I'm not. I got in my PDF file, so I already started reading the second one. So, but the thing is, it's like what happened with Wolverine. Remember the whole thing with Wolverine, where someone leaked out, and it had Wolverine. But it didn't have the complete thing. It had the special effects missing, had the music missing on Wolverine 1. So, but, yeah, please, people, don't say nothing. Just
be nice.
Move along.
All right. Well, okay, so 2 weeks from now, we are going to be talking about A Short Drink from a Certain Fountain. And that's starring Patrick O'Neill and Ruta Lee, the vixen, Ruta Lee. And
let me go ahead and play that.
Yeah, play that clip. Mm-hmm.
And now, Mr. Serling.
No one likes to age, but it's a natural process like death and taxes and the weather. But next time on Twilight Zone, we tell the story about what happens when a certain man doesn't age. As a matter of fact, he grows younger. Patrick O'Neill stars in A Short Drink from a Certain Fountain. And if this one doesn't pull you up by the shoulders, I don't think anything will. I hope we see you next time.
Thank you,
okay.
Rod.
So So that is going to be in 2 weeks, and I hope I'll see everybody there, Felix, Rick, and maybe Louie will be back.
Bobby.
Yeah, and hopefully Bobby, I don't know, but, you know, we'll see how he's getting along. Yeah, I've got to head back over to the hospital. So I just hope we'll see everybody that's here in 2 weeks, and I hope you have a great rest of the weekend. And
sure.
That's it for me. So take care, guys.
Gathering day, you want to say?
Yeah, I'll say best wishes to Bobby, of course.
Yeah, I'll definitely pass that along. Definitely will. Okay, everybody, have a terrific weekend. I love you, Rick. I'll see you all in 2 weeks.
Bye, everybody, and thank you for coming.
Yeah.